This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Effort to inform the public about their legal rights as Americans and immigrants. Socrates once said, "The only good is knowledge, and the only evil is ignorance." So if you wish to know more about CARE services, feel free to contact us at 713-838-CAIR. That's 713-838-2247. Or you can also visit us on the web at www.cairhouston.org.
Aloha! In today's complex world, filled with complicated instructions like do this, turn here, don't staple, fold, spindle, tape, or mutilate, one way, etc., etc., why not take a break from all of this? Not near a seashore or relaxing in a tropical paradise. Well, the surf's up over at kpft.org. So mouse on over to kpft.org and pledge and renew online. It's easy, uncomplicated, and will give you that warm and fuzzy feeling of having done something good for yourself and your community. So wax that mouse, hang 10, and surf over to kpft.org and renew your membership and pledge online at kpft.org. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace. Mahalo.
FM. This is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And we do not have news wrap tonight. They took the week off to stuff themselves with stuffed turkey. But they'll be back. We do have two feature segments from This Way Out, including Dare, a short movie that put a new twist on high school romance. It drew raves on the gay festival circuit in 2005 and now has grown into a new feature-length film in 2009. And there are several events happening in Houston this week. Tomorrow, for example, is World AIDS Day. To commemorate this 21st annual event, there will be several things going on around in the city, including a candlelight vigil at Tranquility Park starting at 5:30 p.m. Eddie De La Roulet of Houston Department of Health and Human Services will join us to discuss World AIDS Day. Thomas Street Clinic is celebrating its 20th anniversary tomorrow. The event will take place at noon at 2015 Thomas Street. An information fair will follow at 1 p.m. and continue until 3 with free HIV testing. Jeff Benavides, the HIV health educator for Thomas Street Clinic, will join us with more information. And then in our second hour, it's the second annual Judy Garland Christmas special. Return to 1963 when CBS first aired this ultra-campy black-and-white television special featuring Judy at her Judiest. Join host Nancy Ford and special guests Sunday, December 6th, which, by the way, is my birthday, at 6 p.m. at the In-N-Out on North Shepherd Drive for an evening of light hors d'oeuvres and a holiday raffle. And events benefit several organizations, and Nancy Ford will be here to tell us more about that. She'll be right here in the studio. Rainbow Pages Foundation presents Rainbow Night at Ensemble Theater with their production of Christmas with the Great Aunt. This GLBT event will take place Thursday, December 10th at Ensemble Theater, and Selangi Legacy and Lonnie Davis of Rainbow Pages will join us for a discussion of those things.
And before we get into our interviews, there's a couple of things we want to talk about. Today is the first day of early voting.
Absolutely. If you haven't gotten out to vote, please make arrangements to do so at usual locations.
I went to West Gray at lunch, and there were no lines, but a lot of people holding signs.
Right. So this week, Monday through Friday, it is 8 to 5. Saturday is from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday is 1 to 6. And then we've got next Monday and Tuesday, which is 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And the following Saturday is the election. So
that's December 12th.
Don't wait until the 12th.
No excuses. And, of course, as we talked about, tomorrow is World AIDS Day.
Absolutely.
That's a very important thing.
It's the 21st annual.
But most importantly, today is the last day of hurricane season.
You wouldn't know it with all the chilly temperatures.
Right. So let's go
with all the hot air from the election too.
Let's go to a piece of music and we'll get right into our show.
Well, I picked out a tree and I've tied it to the car. There's a wreath up on our door, a tiny reindeer in the yard. I drove under the downtown lights, red and green and blue. The silver neon snowflakes only made me think of you. It's Christmas all around me, you're in someone else's land. So I'm sending out my only wish. Wait, that's Deck the Halls. While the teenagers with candy canes ramble through the malls. The girls are down at Ruby's trying to find some Christmas cheer. There's not much to do but drink too much when every day is unclear. So here I am on Christmas Eve, this silent holy night, and I reach up to the stars for you. I pray that you're
is Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And today is November 30th, but tomorrow is December 1st. And Jennifer, what is that?
That is World AIDS Day.
Yes, a
world. And, tomorrow's the 21st anniversary of World AIDS Day.
Exactly right. And in the studio tonight, we have Eddie Desroulets, an official from the Houston Department of Health and Human Services. And he's here to talk about the different events that are planned around the city. He's been kind of organizing this year, so we thought we would bring him on. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate being asked to come.
So what's going on? What's going to happen around town? What are some of the big things?
Well, there's a multitude of events. Probably the biggest three things that I would consider big is the 20th anniversary for Thomas Street, which will be held at lunchtime tomorrow, pretty much. Houston Area Community Center is doing a lecture and testing tomorrow afternoon, and then the Candlelight Observance, which is being held tomorrow night at Tranquility Park, actually.
Yes, and you did this last year, and I know there was a great turnout. What speakers will they have, and what can people expect?
Well, this year we have Lee McGuire as Master of Ceremonies again. Stephen Williams, who's the Health Department Director. Mm-hmm. Sue Lovell, who's the Vice Mayor pro term. And Pete Rodriguez, who's the Director of Thomas Street with the Harris County Hospital District. And mm-hmm. then we're also having two people living with HIV and AIDS who will speak.
Very good. And then you'll have a lighting ceremony.
Yes. Well, along with that, we have the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston, who will be singing a couple of songs. Aaron Coleman will be reading a poem later on in the ceremony. And then we have the lighting of the candles, where Sally Huffer from Montrose Counseling Center will kind of run that portion of the program. I'm just there kind of as a organizer, like
you
said.
You've done a lot of work. I know there were meetings that started over the summer, so you know we appreciate that, and it all culminates tomorrow. But I think the candlelight ceremony is very one of the highlight or kind of the star events, because it's very moving, and to have you know Sue Lovell come out and then you know have people speak, and then we have performances, and that all starts at 5:30.
At 5:30, it goes from 5:30 to 7. Our plans currently, if there's light rain, we will go ahead and hold the ceremony. If there's heavy rain, we'll either move it up under the covering or it may be canceled. But my hope is that we are still able to do it tomorrow.
And I just want to segue that we do have a website if you want to look at the events, and that is worldaidsdayhouston.org.
Right.
So if you're kind of getting lost in all the events, there is that there.
Right. And there is a multitude of events. There's a free testing all over town by Legacy, Montrose Counseling Center, Planned Parenthood. So there's I think starting from 8:00 in the morning just about until 8:00 at night, there's events all over the city.
And I think that's important. If you don't know your status, please go get tested. I mean, it's the first step.
Yeah, I agree with
because,
you.
Because you know, a diagnosis these days is not a death sentence. There are plenty of options these days.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important.
In fact, I was asked earlier today by someone about, you know, why should somebody get tested who is heterosexual, who kind of finds it to be a stigma.
Yes.
To be told you need to get tested. And I told him your recent CDC figures show that 33% of all new positives are heterosexual, so the simple fact that you aren't gay doesn't mean that you aren't open to this disease.
AIDS is not a gay disease, and
doesn't
Harris County lead like the nation in infections, or up in the top tier?
We're in the top tier, top five or six, I think. Last year in 2007, I think we had just over 2,000 positives. In 2008, there were actually 18 more positives than 2007.
What's the demographic of those new people?
Actually, that's a good question. In Houston, 17% were white, 56% were black, 25% were Hispanics, and 2% were other races. Age group-wise, let's see, 61% were between the ages of 20 and 39. So it's
the younger people.
But the fastest growing group is between 14 and 23.
14 and 23, and it sounds like the vast majority of those news are black, from the black community.
African Americans.
Yes. And so how are we reaching that community? How is the city, our Harris County, responding to that?
Well, we're doing, recently, in July, we had the hip-hop for AIDS. So we tested just almost 14,500 people.
Oh, wow.
The majority of them being African American in a two-week period, which is currently the largest testing event in the country. So, you know, I'm going out doing health fairs now. We are providing with the different task forces that we work with are going out and doing testing on certain days. So there's a multitude of ways that we're getting out. We have the contracts with Memorial Hermann in the hospital district that they're doing testing in the emergency rooms, and that's been a really success. Our goal last year or this year was 72,000 people. We actually tested, I think, about 56,000 people in the emergency rooms, which was
amazing
because that's someplace you don't anticipate getting tested.
Right.
And the majority of those people who had positives were like, yeah, I'll take the test, it's no big deal.
And they had no clue.
They had no clue.
Wow.
Was there any statistic out of that 14,000?
How many positives?
Yes, how many positives?
Yeah.
And did anything else show up in those tests?
High rates of syphilis.
No,
still in Houston.
I've heard that syphilis leads HIV, that if that goes up, then HIV is not far behind.
I haven't heard that, but I know in Houston 2 years ago, right before I came to the health department in 07, I think, they had an epidemic of syphilis here in Houston, over 200 and something positives, new positives. And we've worked really hard to bring that down to, I hate to say, an acceptable level, but more in line with the rest of the country. But that still seems to be an issue that we will struggle with here in Houston, even though we continue to do better.
And what did you find as far as AIDS positive?
Off the top of my head, I really don't want to say for sure because I don't have the numbers.
Right. Oh, okay, that's fine.
But I know it was...
there were some found in that 14,000 of people that didn't know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, and that's important for them to, you know, if they go to events or whoever they may be, there's always that chance that you could have been infected and never known it.
Mm-hmm. Right? You know, we've come a long way in 21 years, and this is the 21st anniversary. But what today can people, if someone is diagnosed with HIV, what sort of resources do they have for people that have no idea? Where should they go?
Well, if anybody gets tested in one of the organizations that we work with, they either have their own insurance, they can be seen by their own doctors. For most indigent population, they are referred to the hospital district, at Thomas Street, because they are one of the premier HIV centers in the country. They just don't do HIV. They do substance abuse. They have social workers. They have caseworkers. So they get a real good array of services there.
Right, right.
So, but that would probably be the main thing I talk about when I talk to people.
Right. So there's a bunch of testing places. So for those of you who don't know your status, please go to the World AIDS Houston, WorldAIDSDayHouston.org, and look up the testing locations for tomorrow. But there are also events not only tomorrow but throughout the weekend.
I know of two spiritual based programs, and I don't think I have them on my. They're on the. Yeah, that's not right, true. Let's see.
Well, I have them here.
Bethel Church.
Yes.
Is having a World AIDS Day service on the 5th, I think.
Saturday the 5th.
And Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church is also having an event on the 6th of December in the evening.
Mm-hmm. And that's called Till There's a Cure. So
right,
and that's held with Community World AIDS Day Service, and it's for people that are infected and affected by HIV and AIDS. But what should we think of as tomorrow? I think of it as kind of a remembrance and kind of looking forward and kind of the people that we've lost and kind of taking a moment.
And that's what I've tried over the last 2 years. I've been working with the World AIDS Day Committee. In planning this World's AIDS, the Candlelight Observance, a lot of people have talked, well, we need testing, we need music, we need I don't want to say a party atmosphere, but you know, they want to do more. And to me, it's more subtle. It's about honoring the people who have died and acknowledging them. And that's what it's more about to me.
Was last year the first year for the Candlelight Observance?
Actually, Montrose had been having it for a few years at their location. I think a very small event, and we kind of took. I hate to say that we took that from them, but we took the ideal as a committee, and last year there were about 15 different agencies involved with the committee, and they liked the ideal. And initially we had planned to let Montrose do theirs on the 1st, and then we were going to do ours in the middle of the week amongst some other events that we had planned, and it got moved to the 1st because that's where everybody wanted it, and it turned out to be, I think, a really good event.
I went last year, and it's really... enriching to see that the city, it's not just a Montrose thing, it's
true.
A City of Houston thing, and it's done downtown in front of the skyline, you know, in Tranquility Park with candlelight, and it's very moving, and you know, to have all the, you know, the city officials come out and speak, and this year with Sue Lovell, it's very moving, and it shows that the city and Harris County Hospital District is behind, you know, observing this day, and that HIV and AIDS is still here, and it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, it's not going away, and I think, you know, we can do as much as we can to help not only those who are all positive, but to help those who don't know and who have no idea that they may.
Which is the most important people.
And the scariest. The
because
people.
They're still, if you don't know, then you're not taking the necessary precautions and you're spreading the disease.
I think this can give them the opportunity to make changes in their behavior and their lives if they know, hopefully.
And with HIV and AIDS, the medication is extremely important, and the timing and getting on the medication is a difference between, you know, the side effects and, you know, death.
Yeah, I think especially nowadays, the earlier you find out, the better chance you have, because more people are living longer. Is not a death sentence anymore. So some people are living longer lives because of knowing that they're positive and being on medication. Right. So it's helping them.
And the medications are a lot easier to take now. There's a one pill a day, and you know, it's very manageable. Whereas in the past, it was multiple pills every couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm nervous about the younger generation and this infection rate within them. What is the city doing to kind of address that?
We actually have a task force called Impact that is dealing with especially young black men having sex with men, again, ages 14 to 24 and around that age range. They are planning, I know last May we had a Men Having Sex with Men summit at a local club, and I think they're planning on having two or three summits like that in the next year to get information out, to bring speakers in, to help educate young people that you know, what their behavior can lead to medical issues and problems.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe that's a cultural thing that, you know, some of them kind of keep it quiet on the quote
down low. Yeah.
And so that just, you know, crossing that cultural, that issue and getting to those people is very important.
Mm-hmm. And I think that also leads to the, again, like I said earlier, with the rise in the heterosexual positive rates.
Right.
Where, you know, we hear from a lot of women and men saying, I don't have that issue. I'm in a monogamous relationship. Well, I may be, but my partner may not be.
Quote unquote monogamous.
Yeah. So that's why I think it's really important that everybody gets tested at least once.
Well, everyone, even heterosexuals, need to realize that if they're haven't been a long-term relationship, even if they're in a monogamous relationship, when they're having sex with someone, or anybody's having sex with someone, you're having sex with everyone they've had sex with in the last 5 years.
Right. In fact, there's a poster that the state health department puts out, and I haven't seen it in a while, but it says exactly that. If you've had sex with one person, you've actually had sex with so many people. Mm-hmm. If you had sex with a dozen people, it's hundreds of people, you know, depending on the number.
Oh, yeah, it's a geometric pyramid, the progression, the number of people you've had sex with, and it's phenomenal if you're, even when you maybe aren't as sexually active as a single person or someone outside of a relationship.
It just takes one time.
It only takes one time.
Exactly.
And they may have had that one time and passed it on to you.
And that's why, again, on our side, on the prevention side, we really, we passed out, I remember one month, 16,000 condoms just in R7 Health Center. So, you know, we believe that by protecting yourself, again, that's one of the things that most people don't think about. Well, I'm just having sex with one or two people. Well, you don't know who those people, again, you don't know who those people are having sex with. So it does make a big difference.
So if you do nothing tomorrow and you don't know your status, go get tested at one of the testing locations around the city. Just remember that World AIDS Day is about awareness and, you know, fighting the disease. So do it in your own way and get tested. Know your status. Because 21 years later, we're still here.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, another thing, and my two bits worth, is that, you know, if someone wants to have sex with you and they don't want to use a condom, you can say no. Because it's your life.
Exactly. You should say no.
But I know of situations where men and women both have been pressure placed upon them. It doesn't feel
I'm
as
saved.
Good.
Yes.
Oh, I'm saying, you know, all the lies. So just realize that, you know, if they say they don't want to use a condom, then say no to them.
And, you know, the misconception is that you could look perfectly healthy and be HIV positive for years and not know it and think you're fine, but in reality, you're spreading the disease.
Absolutely. So whether you're having sex, whether you're whichever partner.
And we don't mean to preach. I mean, I know.
Oh, I do.
Most of our generation has been preached. I'm concerned about.
I'm sorry, I do.
I'm concerned about the younger generation that really is oblivious to HIV and the death that it can cause and, you know, not seeing that.
Those are the ones that think they don't have to use condoms.
And they think it's just a manageable disease.
Yeah.
It's manageable.
The attitude of it's not going to happen to me, and people are living long lives now, so what's the big deal?
Right.
You know.
It is a big deal if you have it.
But the thing is, each person is different, and though it may affect me one way, it may affect you another way, and you may not have that long life whether
exactly.
you think of it or not.
Exactly. And is it worth it to lose your life for...
Just say no.
Just say no.
Without a condom, say no.
So tomorrow, December 1st, is World AIDS Day. It's the 21st annual World AIDS Day, and there are several events around the city. We invite you, and we highly recommend that you check one out, possibly going to the Candlelight Vigil downtown. There's a complete listing on the website, worldaidsdayhouston.org. And I'm proud of...
The candlelight service is very moving.
Yes.
Very moving. Even if you go to either one of the religious services.
Yes.
At Bethel and Resurrection MCC on Saturday and Sunday.
There's going to be another candlelight vigil, if you will, with Floss and the Mexican consulate at the Mexican consulate on Montrose around noon or 1-ish.
Yes. It starts at 10 a.m. and it's the candlelight vigil, the Vigila de Luces. I don't know if I butchered that. Probably did. But that is at the Mexican consulate, and that is on Caroline Street in downtown.
Hey, you mentioned the free HIV testing, and I know that one of the locations is obviously at Thomas Street Clinic. Are there other locations as well?
Yes, there are plenty of locations.
Can you name a few of them?
Well, most prominent that our listeners would know is the Legacy Health Services on Westheimer. That's 215 Westheimer. Montrose Counseling Center will be testing at Kroger from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Disco Kroger.
And like you said before, Thomas Street will be testing from noon until 3. And then some outlying places, the Houston Area Community Services, which is on Kirby Drive, I'm not really exactly sure where, will be testing from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. And let's see, there's AMA, which is on 204 Clifton Street from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. So for a complete listing, go to the website that I mentioned, worldaidsdayhouston.org.
Or else, as well as a big ad, if you don't mind me saying, the Houston Press, also with all the locations.
And we love
the Houston
Press. That's
great. Houston Press is great. Very supportive.
Well, tomorrow's World AIDS Day. Please celebrate it. And thank you, Eddie, for coming on and telling us all about that.
I appreciate you guys inviting us in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
On this special program, two celebratory memoirs of survival and recovery, and a movie that dares its audiences to take risks. Our first survivor is gay, Asian, and Canadian, and he might say in no particular order.
This is John Frame for This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine, chatting with Wason Choi, author of Not Yet, at the Brisbane Writers Festival. Wason, welcome.
Well, thank you.
You're an openly gay Canadian, and there are plenty of openly gay Canadians, but an exceptionally well-acclaimed writer, and as an older man, also you've got a wealth of life experience, but what you're writing about particularly in Not Yet is in surviving near-death experiences. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, the book, as you know, is called Not Yet, and I was commissioned to write it because I've had two experiences of dying, quote-unquote, and it was a book about, in the end, a love story about what it means to die and be a gay man. And you have to know that I was born in 1939. I'm 70 years old. As long as I can remember, I was always told you have to get married or who would take care of you when you're old and sick and on and on and on. And during the time I grew up, that was drilled into our head. I was the male member of the family, the only son, so I was to be married, make sure I have enough children, be taken care of. And this book is about in 2001 when I had two traumas, an asthma attack, in the middle of which I also had a heart attack. And I was 2 months in the hospital and 6 months of repair work afterwards. And then I had a second episode 4 years after that. And I had a quadruple bypass. So I decided when someone asked me, would I write about these experiences, I said, yeah, I will. I have to know what it means.
Mm. Because when you had your heart attack, you actually also experienced the effect that many people have of having a stroke as well. You had to go through a full recovery of learning how to talk, yes, and write.
I was given an induced kind of coma because they had put a ventilator down my throat to animate my lungs. They were going into paralysis because of the asthma attack. And on the third day, as they were raising and lowering my levels of consciousness, I started thrashing about, and I had my heart attack combined with all this. And it was a semi-coma state most of the time. They control the levels of consciousness so they can make sure they're not damaging the brain. If I go too deep, then they may not be able to bring me back. So I had hallucinations. I heard from voices from my past who said, why aren't you married? And, you know, and nevertheless, don't surrender, keep going. It's amazing because in the end, this book turned out to be a love story. It is about myself being single, but sharing my life with two families, extended family members. Now, I'm Asian, but my extended family members are Caucasian. And I have a country family, husband and wife, and their two children are my godchildren. I have a city family, the husband and wife, and their daughter is my godchild. And with the country family, I've been together for about 48 years, and the city family, I've been together for about 26, 27 years. And, you know, I want to, in this book, in a way, I didn't realize it, but I'm discovering, as I'm talking about the book, people are telling me as if they're coming out of a closet. I'm gay, but I have my own family, too, and you just made me realize these are my family, because I think many gay people, until recently when we were allowed same-sex marriage and all this, or the idea of it anyways, if our families rejected us or if we grew old and they were gone, we were to assume to be alone. We had no family. Well, I can't tell you what it means to me. The people that showed up 24 hours of the day, taking their turn to be with me, made me realize that family is who loves you, which is one of the themes of my book. But above and beyond that was my deeper understanding that we're talking about love. Love has no rules. And people who grew up in my generation, and you recall I'm 70 years old, always thought, well, family is strictly blood and you have to be purely Chinese or Catholic or Irish or Protestant or Jewish or whatever. That's how I grew up. And I was an in-betweener. I became a banana. Born in Canada in a Caucasian colonial culture, I grew up thinking more British literature than Chinese Cantonese opera. And in that sense, I was always an in-betweener. I didn't quite feel I belonged. I wasn't purely this or purely that. There came a time, though, when I wrote my first book, The Jade Peony, in 1995, that I have a story to tell, and it was about all of us who are in between, including those of us whose sexual orientation is part of that, interlocked oppression of being a race, racial quality in a racist society at the time I was growing up, and never mind the sexual biases. And all in all, I thought, gee, I do have something to write about. And I had the pleasure of writing that book, discovering what it meant to be different, even from your own kind, quote unquote, because as a gay man, I'm also a minority in a Caucasian gay culture. So I just thought, you know, so many things are not yet, and I'm not dead. I've almost died twice. What does it mean? And there came a time after the first duo attacks, the asthma and the heart attack, I recovered enough to go back from my home in Toronto to my birth home in Vancouver, British Columbia, and two ghosts showed up in a restaurant. I don't understand it. You know, I wrote for that part of the book, ghosts are everywhere, but I do not believe in them. And yet, I ended up, having an exorcism, not Hollywood style, very gentle, very sweet Buddhist style, to try and understand what this all meant. I never saw the ghosts. They were seen by the hostess of a restaurant that I patronized quite often. She saw them and was able to describe them to me, and these two ghosts were from my past. I was just stunned. One of them was a boy who was 19 when I was 16, 17 years old, and he befriended me. And this was before I was aware consciously of being gay or any of that. And you have to remember, this was the 1950s when nobody had sex. And the language for sex was so, just dirty, never mind anything that was gay. My first three affairs were with women because I literally didn't know. And I'm that generation who was told when I went to university finally and took psychology, the course on Freud suggested that at a certain stage of growing up, people have same-sex affections and crushes, but it's a passing stage. It's part of maturing, and it's a passing phase. And, you know, that helped me rationalize my situation with the woman I was with and the growing up, and finally, eventually, with Stonewall and all this, my own consciousness was raised. But I tell you, if it is a phase, I'm 70 and I'm waiting. And I tell you, I'm happy it hasn't passed. Yep. I'm very pleased about my own life and who I am. So there I was, an in-betweener, a banana, all of this.
And this banana, that's like yellow, that's in Chinese on the
side. Oh, yes, right. You know, and Caribbean people, when I talk about this, because I do a thing on racism, they tell me, oh, you're talking about our Oreo cookies. And that's black on the outside and white on the inside, because I went from growing up wanting to be part of the Cantonese opera company of old Chinatown. I wanted to be a warrior, one of those beautiful people who on stage wore great clothing and jumped and hopped and skipped and swordplay. And then I saw cowboy movies, and I wanted to be white and ride on a horse. So I became quite banana. And then when we were assimilated into being Canadians, because in 1947, Chinese people were given the right, especially those who were born here, to be Canadian citizens, here being, of course, Canada. And what was interesting was, at that time, I didn't really think much more about that except, well, that's fair, I am Canadian, so I thought, but I never felt right in those shoes. And shortly after my first duo trauma, not only did the ghosts appear, but I had a chance to make a film in China. And it was about a writer in search of Confucius. And the pressure for me when I was going to China was that when you go to China, you'll see how Chinese you are, and you'll know you're Chinese because, you know, all this. And all the elders who were still alive, they were just barely able to contain themselves. And I stood in front of the temples of Confucius, tributes to Confucius and so on, and in a genealogy house where it's the longest one in written history of the people who were born since the time of Confucius in that bloodline. And I looked around and I thought, you know what? I'm a tourist here. I'm in China admiring the philosophy, the art, the temples, the sculptures, the paintings. I'm a tourist. I am a Chinatown boy. I'm a gay man. I am my own person. And I'd rather have a fortune cookie. And so, really, not to trivialize anything, but, you know, a fortune cookie, which people think is Asian, is really created and invented in San Francisco, apparently. So I just want to declare the right of everybody to be whoever they are and realize that if they're in between anything, my gosh, when I knew I was going to die at one point, I thought, you know, I've had the best of both worlds. I am a bridge to two cultures. I'm at a banquet table where all my life I have been given the right in Democratic Canada to choose what I need and to respect and leave behind what I didn't want from either culture. And then there was fusion, which makes Canada and much of America now a multicultural possibility, a glimpse of heaven. And I just had all these experiences and I felt I needed to get this down on paper. So I wrote, "Not yet, because I'm still here."
Tune in for the conclusion of John Frame's illuminating conversation with writer Wason Choi.
I think truly there's a situation where human beings have no other reason but to be family. And that's the only word. It shouldn't depend on bloodline or on being straight and officially okayed by religion or by civil law. It is human beings making contact when it matters.
Next time on This Way Out.
This is Queer Voices.
And we're back talking about, continuing our discussion about World AIDS Day, which is tomorrow. And in the studio tonight, we have Jeff Benavides. Is that correct? Did I pronounce that correctly?
You sure did.
And you are the HIV health educator at Thomas Street Clinic. And what does Thomas Street Clinic have going on tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow we'll be recognizing World AIDS Day, and we will be having our annual event, which is a ceremony in remembrance of those who have passed away dying from AIDS. And also with this, we have our annual remembrance tree. And with this remembrance tree, we ask people from the community to bring an ornament in honor of those who have passed away from AIDS. And that ornament is going to be placed on our 12-foot Christmas tree that we have outside the clinic. Along with the ceremony, of course, you know, there'll be our director will be speaking, our medical director will be speaking. We've also had invitations sent out to Sheila Jackson Lee, to several senators and representatives from our city officials. So Adrian Garcia, Ed Gonzalez, many of those will be coming out as well to speak and say some words.
And is this not a special anniversary for the Thomas Street Clinic?
Yes, it is. It is very proud to present that it is our 20th anniversary of Thomas Street Health Center. Our doors actually did open in May of 1989, and but you know, May came so fast this year, it just kind of passed us up. So we said, well, when World AIDS Day comes up this year, that's when we will you know, tell the public this is our 20th anniversary.
Well, let's
of service.
Talk a little bit about Thomas Street. What's the purpose of Thomas Street Clinic?
Well, Thomas Street Health Center, as I said before, was opened back in May of 1989. And it was basically brought together by a group of nurses under the Harris County Hospital District who said that Jefferson Davis Hospital is just being overwhelmed by HIV/AIDS patients and that they need to find a location out away from Jefferson Davis Hospital that will assist the AIDS patient directly in medical care. They searched around and found the old South Pacific Railroad, a hospital. Southern Pacific Railroad on the...
South Pacific.
Southern Pacific Railroad Station hospital, and they opened the facility up, and it became the first freestanding HIV/AIDS clinic in the nation.
And at the beginning, that was a little bit controversial.
Yeah.
Because the bus lines didn't go there. But it has come a long way.
With people knowing this coming into their community, into their neighborhood, it got a lot of friction. Many people didn't. We have patients that rocks were being thrown at them. Things were being yelled at our patients for coming to our clinic. People did not want to know the clinic was back there.
Yeah.
And so it was a little bit of a stigma, fear, a little bit of friction. But, I mean, I think today is now it's being opened and welcomed more so than anything.
Well, I mean, we still have stigma today, but I can only imagine 20 years ago what people going there must have felt like and, you know, the community resistance.
Oh, yeah.
Around Thomas Street.
Yeah. When I came on at Thomas Street, which was 11 years ago, we proposed maybe putting a sign out on North Main basically saying, you know, Thomas Street Clinic this way, and an arrow pointing toward the direction where the clinic was. And many of the patients were in fear of posting this sign simply because that would signify where the AIDS clinic is and more friction might come up or more stigma. But we worked with the city officials as well as the community, and that sign is still up today. So it was welcomed and very well received.
In your 11 years, what have you seen change at Thomas Street? I mean, what's different these days when you started?
Since I started, let's see. Well, I mean, the idea of customer service or customer care has changed completely. Where before Thomas Street was always sort of a fear of how to get into the clinic, how to receive medical care, and today there's more of an easier flow of how a patient may come into our clinic. We do still receive very high praise and high ratings from our patients on customer care, in seeing the doctor, in picking up meds, and seeing our various social services. So there's been a bigger customer friendliness at Thomas Street these days.
Very good. Now, for people that are unfamiliar, where is Thomas Street?
Thomas Street is on the north side of downtown. If you were to be standing, let's say, downtown at the University of Houston downtown, you'd want to go about 2 miles north on North Main to smaller street called Bishop, and then you'd take a left on Bishop and go about 4 blocks. And there's Thomas Street.
So eventually the light rail will go by there, I guess.
Eventually, yeah.
Yes, so
eventually.
20 years from now, yes.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, 20, 15 years, hopefully 15.
Now, so tell us more about tomorrow and World AIDS Day and what the people can expect if they go there and see the ceremony and the celebration.
Okay, great. I'm the coordinator of the event, and I've been working with a committee, and we've been working many months now in bringing this to the community. But on... tomorrow, at 12 noon, we will have an event where we will have city officials, as I said before, and state officials coming to present with us commemoration speeches and certificates of recognition for Thomas Street's care, as well as our director will speak, our medical director, our director will speak. Then we'll also have a few testimonies from the very first medical director of Thomas Street Clinic. She will be speaking.
Is that one of the original nurses?
No, actually, it was the medical director. Her name is dropping my mind right now.
Oh, no. They're going to be killed.
I know they're going to be. It'll come to me. But anyway, and then our medical director, Dr. Giordano, will be speaking. And then our main director, Pete Rodriguez, will say a few words. And so we'll have these people coming. Then we'll also recognize our Tree of Remembrance toward the end of the...
Tell us more about that. Do people bring ornaments then, or do they get them there, or how does that work?
No, people can bring these, you know, they can make them from at home, or they could, you know, we will have some there that if people want to write a person's name on them, they can do that. Mm-hmm. But if they want to bring something meaningful of their own, they can bring that in as well. And then they will have a moment where we'll recognize the tree. It'll be blessed by our chaplain there at the clinic. And then people will be asked to go and place their ornament on the tree. So,
and then I read that there's going to be an information fair after that.
Right, that's right. Yeah, we will be also having an information fair from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. And what this is actually we've asked several agencies that we collaborate with throughout the year. We'll have Montrose Clinic coming out. I'm sorry, oops.
Oh.
Legacy coming out. And then we'll also be having AIDS Foundation Houston. We'll also have AMA coming out. Again, several different agencies that we collaborate with, and they'll be giving out their information to the community and to patients and letting them know what services they have to offer for HIV/AIDS care. And if I may take a step back, it's Dr. Susan Miller.
Oh, you got it. David.
She was our first medical director of the clinic.
Yes.
And she will be coming out to give a speech in remembrance of her, of 20 years of Thomas Street care.
Very good. You know, we're very lucky to live in Houston with all the different organizations, HIV service providers, and Thomas Street is just one of the many. But to be around for 20 years, and, you know, there's no end in sight, so it could be another 20, 30 years.
But yeah, we could be seeing, you know, in our year silver anniversary, 25 years, or, you know, even our 50th anniversary. Our main focus is that, you know, AIDS is going to be here, and that we are going to be there to help that those, you know, help them be in medical care and take care of the illness and move forward in life and living longer, living stronger.
And who is eligible to go to Thomas Street?
Any person that's HIV positive.
Okay, so you have to have the diagnosis.
You have to have the diagnosis of being HIV positive. Secondly, the person would have to be living in Harris County.
Okay.
And then also there'd be a request for, you know, if they're receiving any kind of benefits from the government or Medicare and Medicaid. But those are some of the main requirements for coming into Thomas Street.
So if you have insurance, are you eligible to go?
We do accept insurance. So we're seeing more and more people coming into our clinic with insurance. Basically, they know that we do offer, you know, we have, you know, medical physicians from both UT and as well as Baylor College of Medicine. So they know we have a good staff for medical care for HIV.
And in some cases, maybe better because they're trained in HIV.
Right, exactly.
And we have a huge shortage of HIV physicians in Houston. And so, you know, you'll probably see more and more people with insurance that go there because that's where the training and the expertise is gained.
Right,
at Thomas Street, so...
And we do see many of our doctors perhaps referring out to other physicians in the city that they may know that give assistance to HIV care.
So tomorrow, tell us what time. Tell us about the...
The event will start tomorrow at 12 noon, and it'll go from 12 to 1 with the information fair from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
And what is a number or website that people can go to?
For questions on the event, they can call me at 713-873-4026.
Okay.
They can go to your website that you mentioned earlier in our discussion with Eddie Rolle.
Yes.
And
that is worldaidsdayhouston.org.
Thank you. And that will also give you information about our event as well. So, But we welcome people to come out. I do also have to mention real quickly here, though, we did have to move the event due to our inclement weird weather in Houston, that we normally host this outside, and we have to move it, we had to move it inside. We made the decision today, and that the event will be hosted on the third floor of the clinic, and we hope to be able to accommodate at least, you know, as many people as want to come out and be a part of the event.
Now, is there a lot of parking? Can people just, like, all of our listeners show up tomorrow and...
They can show up. There will be parking in the back side of the clinic as well as in the neighborhood. So wherever you can find a spot, we'll welcome parking anywhere. So.
Very good. We've been talking to Jeff Benavides of the Thomas Street Clinic, and they are celebrating their 20th anniversary, and it's an anniversary, I don't know, it's kind of a bittersweet anniversary.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we have had seen a lot of struggles of our patients through the years, but we also, you know, have those doors open to everyone with issues with HIV and AIDS, so we want to continue to offer that. So it is a bittersweet, but we do want to let people know we're here and we're open our doors for medical care for HIV and AIDS.
Yes, and tomorrow's World AIDS Day, so remember, and if you don't know your status, get tested. Anything else that we want our listeners to know about?
No, I mean, we will be offering free testing tomorrow, too, so that will be available from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on the first floor of Thomas Street Health Center, so that is free testing, and your results are back in 20 minutes.
So if nothing else, do that, and we appreciate you coming on.
Oh, and thank you for the time.
And before we go, there's an announcement that the Houston GLBT Community Center is going to be hosting an exhibit by photography of Christopher Garrett for World AIDS Day. And it will be tomorrow at the Community Center, which is at 3400 Montrose Boulevard, Suite 207. And it's from 5 to 8 p.m. And they're going to be serving refreshments.
Yes, and that's also on the website, worldaidsdayhouston.org. Thank you.
And coming up at the top of our second hour, Nancy Ford will be here to talk about the second annual Judy Garland Christmas Special, so stay tuned for that.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Fates allow, hang a shining star upon the highest bough. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Thank you.
That was Melissa Etheridge doing the cover of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
It was a Saturday before Christmas, December 19th. I was undecided about any plans for that eve, when on the radio a voice did say, "A Jerry Christmas is near, so get on the way." The voice did explain in a timbre so clear that at Dan Electro's guitar bar, great entertainment would appear. Spoken word would start out the night, and then music would play for everyone's delight. The lineup included Run Over Twice, Guy Schwartz and his Hippies, and I thought that would be nice. But not to stop there, Country Store Buffalo and the Psychedelos would play. The blues of Sonny Boy Terry and the Sideshow Tramps would pave the way for A Dance Without a Backbone by Zoa and Friends. It was then I realized that nothing else could contend. So why the great party, and what do I remit? Why a $15 cover? It's a KPFT benefit. So I sprang to my feet, and out the door I flew to 1031 East 24th Street, just south of the Loop. The doors were at 7, there was no time to waste. It's a deadbeat production with some help from Spare Change. I was halfway there, driving down North Main, and then the message concluded with this happy refrain.
We wish you a Jerry Christmas, we wish you a Jerry Christmas, we wish you a Jerry Christmas, and a happy Bob Weir.
90.1 KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. What does that mean?
Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them.
A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio.
When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better.
Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community.
But maintaining this sort of radio requires you.
Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource.
So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today.
You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge.
Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come.
So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT.
This is commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.
KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Well, we're going to be doing a little retro stuff tonight. I mean, with the success of Mad Men. And I actually watched Barefoot in the Park yesterday.
Oh, what that great.
That is a great, great movie. And another really crazy movie. I don't know if you remember this, 1, 2, 3.
Yes.
You remember that
I
one?
I do.
It's about East Berlin, West Berlin, and the Coca-Cola, and the whole Cold
That's
War
so
and all that
funny.
Type of stuff. So, Nancy Ford is with us. And
hey, guys. Nice to see you.
Yeah, we're going to let
Speaking
you
Speaking of retro,
yes.
Hi,
yes.
Nancy.
Oh, you call me old? Oh, my goodness.
Well,
it's retro.
And by the way, the Texans lost yesterday.
Who?
Sunday is the day you watch football. What? I don't know if you're. Oh, I'm sorry.
You're the wrong.
Is
yes.
that the soccer team?
Well,
perhaps they should have been playing soccer.
Of course, Nancy Ford is with Outsmart, which is a wonderful magazine.
Thank you.
And the new issue is out.
Today. Yes.
Of course, there's a nice story about Anise, and there's much, much great stuff in here, of course, about Christmas and buying guides
sure.
and all that type of stuff. But Nancy is here to talk about the Judy Garland Christmas Special, second annual.
The second annual Judy Garland Christmas Special and sing-along. Kindred Spirits is the group I'm affiliated with these days, and wonderful, wonderful group of women.
That just lives on, doesn't it?
It lives on. This year, Jack, we are celebrating the 30th anniversary since Kindred Spirits, the bar, the original lesbian nightclub, opened in 1980.
And, you know, I have to
wow,
give you all credit.
Incredible.
I know you're involved with that,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, Marion Coleman's involved
Marion
in
Coleman
that.
Marion Coleman opened the bar and is our president.
And
yes.
Sally Huffer. And probably a number of other people at it. The fact that the bar closed down quite a while ago, but the spirit still lives on, and the spirit the fact that it raises a lot of money for the community.
Well, thank you for noticing. Yeah, it closed in 1989, so you would think that a bar that closed 21 years ago
yes.
Would kind of have faded from the memory of the community, but no, indeed. About 8 years ago, Marion and her partner Trudy and a group of women started a reunion celebration. So many people were asking Marion when she was going to open another bar, and of course, that being about the last thing anyone would want to do, particularly in this economy, they decided to put together a reunion dance annually, and the women responded in droves. Hundreds and hundreds of women come out every year. That has expanded into a group, the Kindred Spirits Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
We recently became an official 501c3. We'd previously been operating under the umbrella of a Christmas song fest. So, you know, Jerry Atwood, for a long time, was wonderful in spearheading that. But we've become our own entity, and we're very excited that our fundraising efforts are paying off. We've raised over $100,000 for our charities, which are Sisters, Lesbian Health Initiative Houston, Houston Buyers Club, and Bearing Support Network.
Hmm, great organization.
Great organization.
Thank you.
So what is this special you're doing?
Well, like we say, it's the second annual, and I think maybe it would just, you know, make the most sense if I read directly from the jacket of the DVD that we play. There is an actual show. You come in. It's at In-N-Out this Sunday at 6 o'clock. You'll come in. We have holiday music. We'll have some karaoke sing-along for the crowd. We've got a buffet. Of course, the wonderful staff at In-N-Out will provide libations. And then the Bio City Women's Chorus is going to be performing some numbers for us. And we show the Judy Garland Christmas special
on
the big screen.
So this was really the TV special.
This is the actual television special from 1963.
Wow.
Spend an unforgettable Christmas at home with Judy Garland and daughter Liza Minnelli. You've heard of her, right?
Yeah, I remember
Mel
her.
Torme, Jack Jones, and Judy's younger children, Lorna and Joe Luft. And enjoy one of television's most charming, captivating, and entertaining holiday treasures. Broadcast on December 22, 1963, as a special installment of the Judy Garland Show, this warm and wonderful hour features dozens of seasonal favorites and great tunes, including Judy's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, Little Drops of Rain, Arousing Consider Yourself from Oliver with Liza, Lorna, and Joey, Jack Jones' Lollipops and Roses, and Judy and Mel's duet of his holiday evergreen, The Christmas Song, which is, by the way, hysterical because Judy Garland, bless her little intoxicated heart, is falling off the piano stool. Beside, it's just really funny. And it's just
worth seeing.
It really is a wonderful, wonderful time. It's the big big screen there at In-N-Out, and it's real cozy. We decorate the place all Christmassy with candles and holly and everything. And
no, the In-N-Out's where now?
It's on North Shepherd.
North Shepherd. What's that
in
address?
In the Heights. 1500 block. 1537, yes.
Oh, okay.
1537.
North Shepherd.
North Shepherd, yes. Kind of across the street from the Valero, if you use convenience stores as your landmark.
Of course, there's one on every corner.
There seems to be that. I suppose that wouldn't help. But it really is a fun,
that's
fun
like saying
time.
It's across the street from Starbucks.
That's a good point. Don't do that in River Oaks. But I narrate it kind of like a la Rocky Horror Picture Show, kind of narrate it comedically as we go along. And it's just a really fun night. It was shoulder to shoulder last year. Folks really came out and supported it, and it's a fun time.
So you sing along with the sort of like the Rocky Horror Picture Show was, and get up and dance and sing to it?
There is not a lot of room to dance. No. But we encourage people to sing along, and we are actually having karaoke sing-along prior to Judy Garland show.
Come dressed as Judy Garland and sing?
I wouldn't recommend that you come dressed as Judy Garland, but you know what? You seem to be going off on your own creative little self here. So I encourage you.
I just want to give some people some ideas.
I encourage
you,
Nancy, to
approach
it in
any way. We have to deal with her every week.
Aye. I want to send a shout-out to Deborah Bell. What's going on with Deborah Bell? Hey, Deborah.
Deborah is probably not listening. because the signal does not reach up into East Texas where she is, but she...
Cosmically.
Yes, she may be listening online tomorrow or sometime.
Oh, very good.
We do miss her. She was a very integral part of the show.
Indeed.
And she did a lot of work
time.
And a longtime activist in this community and still contributing with her FemNet.
Oh, of course. Read it every day. Read it every day. But anyway, back to us.
Yes, there's this event coming up on the 6th.
Back to us. So how you been? Got your Christmas shopping done? I don't know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I would love it if you could all come out and join us. It's the donation goes right to our four beneficiaries. Again, Sisters, Bearing Support Network, Lesbian Health Initiative, and the Houston Buyers Club. And I've got a little song about it if you'd like to hear it.
Oh, I would love to.
A little seasonal song? Okay. Kindred Spirits works to help save women's lives, funding MEMS and PAPS for our daughters and our wives. So thank you, LHI, the Bearing Network too, Sisters and the Buyers Club for everything you do. Oh, jingle bells, this is why we're here, to give these groups the extra boost they need this time of year. Oh, jingle bells, I can't believe I'm doing this. Jingle bells, thank you in advance for emptying your pockets of the money in your pants.
For those of you who'd like to have this forever, you can download this from archives probably late tomorrow or Wednesday, and you can
it's
record it and save it forever.
It's a keeper.
It will also be on iTunes. I'm serious. We're on iTunes.
Please comment. Just tweet us and tell us and give us your comments.
I'm cracking up. You guys bring out the best in me. I swear you do.
So
are the Saints still winning? Can somebody call in and tell me what's going on with Monday Night Football? You're killing me here. I know. Who am
football.
I?
Football?
Yeah. Show tunes. Gotta dance. What? Okay.
Well, all life is a musical.
A cabaret, as they say.
Or a horror picture.
Oh, I guess it depends on why you look at it.
Oh, Lordy.
So you're keeping yourself busy in the community?
Very busy. Yeah, it seems like, well, again, with Kindred Spirits, with all the activity that we've been stirring up for ourselves with the new 501c3 designation. And I'm sorry, I cannot believe that it's been 30 years since that club opened. How could it be? I'm only 31 myself.
And those of us who remember it, barely.
Metric.
It was a very nice place. It was in two different locations.
It was in two different locations. The first one was on Buffalo Speedway, where the Buffalo Grill is now, in that same strip center. And two levels, it kind of looked like a Bennigan's, a lesbian Bennigan's, is how without the entrees. Lots of dessert, though.
Took the words out of my mouth.
Ba-dum-bum. Oh. Then a couple years later, they moved over to near the Galleria.
Right
off Loop 610.
Right, on Richmond.
I remember it being there.
Right off the freeway. So, yeah, but the interesting thing about Kindred Spirits was, and is, it was so much more than just a bar, which is not to say there's anything wrong with the bar, because I've spent plenty of time and, you know, made my living there for many years. But it was more than that. It was almost a community center. There
right.
were theatrical presentations there. Blood drives in the early years of the AIDS crisis.
We also did
the
some mailers. We used to have the pride meetings there.
Political organizations met there. Yes, absolutely. In the 80s, there weren't a lot of other organizations and, you know, particularly social organizations for people to turn to who were gay. So it became an absolute community center, and that spirit has continued on, obviously, to this very day. The 16 women, I think there's 16 of us who make up the board, are just the most incredible, inspiring, talented women I have ever spent time with. So I'm very, very pleased and very privileged to be able to work with them.
Fabulous. Well, Nancy, thank you for coming by.
My pleasure.
And
it's
we
great
hope to
see you,
you
Bert.
Know, we hope to all see you on December the 6th at 6 p.m., the sing-along with the Judy Garland Christmas Special, which is a fabulous... I actually remember... probably not the original broadcast, but probably a repeat of it in black and white. And it's real campy.
It's very campy.
It's going to be at the In-N-Out, which is at 1537 North Shepherd. Doors open at 5. They have a suggested donation. It looks like it's going to be a fun event.
It's going to be a fun event, I promise.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Light a candle in the snow and the ice so you will know the fire and the bright that burns through and through the darkest night, through the icy world in white, through and through the darkest night, through the icy world in white. May peace be your gift and
be yourself
your gift. At this time and all the whole year through. You wanted from this life, even so, and may the light in a winter heart be born anew. May the light be born anew. The sky is full of snow that falls and deepens on the trail, and the river's icy veil. Still, inside it is warm and kind, though the world is black and and the wind moans all the night, though the world is black and white, and the wind moans all the night. May peace be your gift and
your blessing
at this time and all the whole year
and all year through.
And may you get what you wanted from this light, even so, and may the light and a winter heart be born anew. May the light be born. Shall break forth again. Dies Natalis, solis in viti. Dies Natalis, solis in viti. Dies Natalis, solis in viti. The birthday of the undefeated sun. Speak in winter and the words can go unheard. Until sunny summer days when the light comes full in play. Holy nights the shepherd comes and so the king. Feel the radiance of light through the long cold winter nights. Feel the radiance of light through the long cold winter nights. May peace be your gift and
your blessing.
You wanted from this night, even so, and may the light in a winter heart be born anew. May the light be born anew. May peace be a gift and
your blessing
at this time and all
this time, through
you. May you get what you wanted from this night, even so, and may the light in a winter heart.
Was called Winter Hearts by Chris Williamson. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And continuing on with our community events, we have the Rainbow Pages Foundation and their production of Christmas with Great Aunt. And in the studio, we have Solange Legacy, a board member, and Lonnie Davis, who is a co-founder. And Lonnie's voice is a little bit out tonight, so she's going to do her best to talk.
She's welcome. Say something.
I appreciate y'all allowing me here, and I wouldn't miss this for the world.
It sounds good.
Sounds perfect.
Now, I've heard
downright sexy.
I've heard, yeah, exactly. Kind of breathless. But I've heard of Rainbow Pages, but I haven't really heard of Rainbow Pages Foundation. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the foundation is a collaboration between Christina and myself. We have been in and around the gay community for years, working on other programs, trying to get involved. And through our involvement with the different organizations, they have asked us to go back to our community, being people of color, and try to get them more involved. And we haven't had much luck with that.
So this thing, that this event that's coming up, is to reach out to that portion of our community.
It's a collaboration of all, trying to bring everybody together. One of the things that we found out was in going back to the Hispanic and Black GLPT community, when it comes to community support and community pride, they were reluctant to get involved because they didn't feel that a lot of the programs were designed for them. So keeping that in mind, and myself being a member of the Hash PFAC Scholarship Board, when I was approached 2 years ago, I was asked to be on that board because I'm a minority, and they wanted to reach out to that demographics that is not normally serviced through their organization. So putting all these things together, we start thinking, well, maybe we need to do something that was directly geared toward that in order to empower people of color, in order for them to get more involved within the Main Street community.
Very good. Now, how did you pick this play that's coming up?
Well, that's another thing. We've been working with the Ensemble Theater, which is a predominantly, which is a historical Black theater in Houston for years. They wanted to get involved within the GLBT community because they have some actors and playwrights that are of our community.
Our people are in the theater.
There you go. There you go.
Yes.
And but they didn't know how to approach it. The other theaters in town have GLBT night, mm-hmm. and in working with Robert Ross, who works over at the Ensemble, him and I started thinking about it this year, and he approached us with trying to do a Rainbow Night at the Ensemble Theater. And because the Ensemble Theater have some heavy drama sometime, we figured that the best way to go would be with some of their musical, because everybody can get involved with the musical. So twice a year, the Rainbow Pages Foundation will be buying out the theater and selling the tickets to help support. I'm losing my voice. I'm sorry.
Well, on KPFT, we can't really discuss the ticket prices, but the tickets are reasonable and they do go towards the foundation.
Definitely, definitely.
And so, when is this play? Maybe Solange can answer that. So we'll give you a rest.
Thank you.
The play is on December 10th.
Okay. And where is this Ensemble Theater?
The Ensemble Theater is located at 3535 Main Street.
Okay. So right off the light rail. And
right. It's right off the light rail.
Yes.
Exactly. And there's parking in the back and on the side.
And what time does it start?
It starts, the play actually starts at 7:30.
Okay.
But we have a reception, and that starts at 6:30.
Okay, so people can come and be social. And
yes, definitely. There will be drinks and food for them.
Very good.
Now, what's the play about?
Uh-oh, we're back to Lonnie.
It's a Christmas play theme. It's just showing some of the hysterics that goes along within a family structure on Christmas. So that's where you get the name, Christmas with My Great Aunt.
Now, is it GLBT focused, or is it just mostly about the family?
No, it's just family.
Which is, everyone has family, and it goes crazy. So yeah,
everybody has absolutely. A great aunt.
And,
yeah. Everybody has a great aunt.
There is no color bound for that type of relative in all of our families.
And no sexual orientation limitation, because it's all the same, I think.
Yes,
yes,
I believe so.
Definitely.
Yeah, so now the play is running from, I see, November 21st through December 27th, but this is a special night.
Yeah, and actually, if you come on our night, you get the ticket price is a little bit less than what they're regularly priced at.
And now the money goes towards the foundation?
Yes, this is going to be our first major fundraiser. We're a new foundation, and we're trying to, right now, our company is backing it. But we want the foundation to start being
self-sustaining.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Now, your company is the Rainbow Pages,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and tell us about the Rainbow Pages, so they'll know where the roots of this or this foundation are.
Well, they're in Pearland. I had no idea.
well, our headquarters is in Pearland. We're actually in...
They let y'all go, have a business in Pearland?
I drove out there.
I think we kind of snuck up on them.
I drove out there. You know, I'm from Brazoria County, and Pearland is in Brazoria County. I drove out there, and there was a sign that said Rainbow Pages, and I about died. I could not believe we had an outpost.
Okay, if you know Christina at all, you know that she's a very big activist, and she actually tried to get them to put gay and lesbian, and the owner of the building compromised. But he said, "I'll let you do Rainbow Pages, but I can't let you do."
But isn't it across the street from like the city hall or something, or some big?
There's a civic building right across the street from us. Yes,
so I love
thinking about joining it. So,
I hope you do.
Just time permitting, you know. I believe in empowering everybody, and I think a lot of times naiveness is what causes the mistrust and the hatred that's out there. And the only way people are going to accept us is to get to know us.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I believe that. Yes, yes.
If you know one of us, then you can relate, and you're less likely to be hateful.
Definitely.
Now, the Rainbow Pages. Tell me about the Rainbow Pages.
Rainbow Pages was founded 7 years ago. We are a business directory of gay-friendly businesses and services that cater to the upscale gay community. We have books in Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, and Oklahoma. We have another 10 directories online as well throughout the United States, and we're hoping to put them in print soon.
So if you ever see the directory, it's the shiny kind of glossy one. It's got the color.
Yes,
it's the one with the pretty colors.
The pretty colors, yes.
You know, just like we are.
It doesn't have any fingers walking on it?
No.
I don't know anything about that, but it's representative of our community, the multicolor and the multi.
Yes.
And the shiny.
So basically, whatever city you may be in, you just do Rainbow Pages.
Right.
And there's a real good chance you'll find the Rainbow Pages for your community.
Definitely. Right.
And
definitely.
If you want to look it up on the internet, just go to www.gayrainbowpages.com.
I'd like to tell y'all something else about the Rainbow Pages. A lot of people don't know. The guy who does the cover is gay and blind. His name is Jeremy Lane.
Yes,
and he's been doing our covers for the last 2 years now. Awesome young man. And how he's able to paint so beautifully, I couldn't even begin to tell you.
He's been on our show. He's the president of the blind organization.
Yeah, B-Flag.
Yes.
You know, when I met him, I told you when you came to office, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. I've been around a little bit.
You would never know. Look, you would never know.
So, you know, I've been fighting for one cause or another all my life. And when I met Jeremy, him and I were talking, and he told me, he said, "Could you imagine all the stuff you've been through and then being blind on top of that?"
It's crazy.
And, you know, and then I had to take a step back because I'm thinking, I thought I knew what discrimination was, but they see with their hands. As soon as a person realizes that they're gay or lesbian or trans or whatever, they can no longer touch, which means they can no longer see.
That's right.
You know, and I'm like, you know what?
Wow.
Yeah, he made me sit back and pause.
Very much so. And the covers are beautiful.
They're gorgeous.
So
they're gorgeous.
Jeremy is definitely talented. So tell us, for our listeners, we're talking about the Rainbow Night at Ensemble Theater, which is put on by the Rainbow Pages Foundation. And the night is actually December 10th. So, and the play, tell us about the play again.
The play is about a family. It's a family that get together every year, and they meet at this church. It's a 150-year-old church.
And so it winds up being, you know, like most families with a great aunt, chaotic, but she straightens out everything.
I see.
I can only imagine. I can sort of write the dialogue on that. Just take your own family and put them in the play.
Exactly. Yes. Now, what is the future for the Rainbow Pages Foundation? What's next?
That's okay. We're looking to have basically three different sets of people that we want to direct our services to. Gay youth, which would be ages 13 to 17 year olds. Young adults, which would be 18 to 23 year olds. And then old fogies like myself. No, I mean everybody
no.
else.
Everybody over 25.
Everybody
right?
over no, 25. No. No, seriously. Like I started to tell you, one of the reasons that being involved with PFLAG has scholarship program, I didn't really understand that even though they had all that money out there, it's hard to attract people of color, mm-hmm. the youth of color. So I want to get into find out where they're at, where their mindset at, get people, children that are in that age group, young people that are in that age group, get them involved and motivate them in order to seek higher education for them to apply for these type of scholarships. Because there is a lot of money out there.
Yeah.
But if they're not aware of it by getting them involved in the community that's out there, then the money is just sitting.
Yes.
You know?
And it's definitely an underserved portion of our community.
Yeah.
Both in age and in race, too.
Exactly.
So. What if there's someone out there that's listening to this program that wants to contact you about that? Scott, how would they do that?
They can contact me directly, or
you can go to www.gayrainbowpagesfoundation.com, or you can call us at 281-997-9778. Mm-hmm. And that's Lonnie or Solange.
And they can get you?
Yes, definitely.
And what demographic are we looking for again? Age group?
Age group 13 and up.
13 and up.
Let me say this. It depends on if they're volunteering, helping, assisting, or need help. So actually we're looking for all age groups.
Oh, okay.
And if there's programs already started that want to partner with us, we are really looking forward to hearing from them.
Exactly.
Them.
Because we're so new, we're looking for guidance and support from other organizations. We're also willing to assist other organizations and to achieving their goals as well. So we have our arms out to all.
Did you That's say great. That you were part of Hatch?
I am on the Hatch PFLAG Scholarship Board.
Okay.
Whereas I sit with the board and interview young people when they are applying for scholarships.
Okay. Because when you say that age group, I immediately think of Hatch.
Yes.
And so that's where I would send people. But this is another place
that
you...
But you'd be surprised how many people of color do not even know...
They don't even...
Are afraid to go to Hatch because they don't think that the programs within those organizations are designed for them. And a lot of it is not being aware.
Right.
You know, I believe that if they see more of us in and around the leadership of those organizations or assisting in those organizations, then they'll realize, hey, maybe there's something there for me.
I totally agree. And, you know, just being visible and being part of our community, the full spectrum of the GLBT community.
Definitely. Definitely. You know,
we're a very large, diverse, and multifaceted community. So
easy for you to say. I was going to ask, did I hear you right that this is a musical?
Yes.
Because I was thinking it was a play, and I thought that, play, and yeah. I wanted to come back to that and say it's a musical.
Well, like I was saying, because this is a historically black theater, a lot of their dramas are very heavy, and it doesn't meet the taste of all people. Some people can deal with it, some people can't. Musicals are always somewhat lighthearted, you know, so they're a little bit easier on the mind, for lack of a better.
Well, yeah. And all of our community, well, most of our community anyway, who, those that have the gene, enjoy musicals.
Yeah, I know.
A little foot stomping, knee slapping music, absolutely.
I definitely have.
You've got the gene, I already know you
I have
do.
The Broadway gene, all of it.
I've been going to the Ensemble Christmas Theater for the last 5 years, and I've enjoyed it tremendously.
Yes, I have to admit that I've never been to the Ensemble Theater.
Well, you need to come on out.
December.
This is the time. It's coming Sunday.
And I know I'm a huge fan of musical, and you know I love the gay, so
and you don't have to wait to get there and purchase a ticket. You guys can go online and purchase a ticket.
Okay,
and at where? Rainbow
Pages Foundation .com, or you can purchase a ticket straight from the ensemble
for that night. And
for that night,
and they're very reasonable.
Yes, so, they are,
and it goes to a good cause.
Yes. Definitely.
Well, is there anything we've missed that you want to make sure that we know about?
Well, I would like to give them an example of when we mentioned partnering.
Oh, absolutely.
We have an organization called A240 Euphoria that's partnering with us. And what we're doing is we are actually helping them sell tickets to a New Year's party, which they're having out in League City. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that they sell tickets and they give us a percentage of the proceeds that go straight to the foundation.
Okay.
Oh, that's excellent.
People. Yes.
And is that part of the GLBT community? Or is
that is GLBT community is. Also.
In League City.
Yes.
Well, League City?
Hey, we're spending out. Our flag
is being planted.
Plant that rainbow flag. Who would have thought?
We are expanding, you know. One of the things that we try to tell people when we contact them with the directory for advertisement, and they'll say, well, you know, I'm way over here. I said, sweetie, we are all over.
Exactly.
We are not just in Montrose. We might go out there to hang out or whatever. But when I go back to live, I live in Pearland. You know, when I'm in Kema, you know, I'm in Galveston. I'm all over.
And that's the thing about Queer Voices. We have 100,000 watts that go all, you know, almost to Conroe down to almost Galveston.
There you go.
We cover everybody. So if you're listening and you feel like you're isolated and you're out in the middle of nowhere,
because there
are plenty of us that grew up in the sticks that come to the city, but we're still out there in the sticks. And you know what? We need to go back and reclaim our homeland, you know, the rural areas.
Definitely.
Of
you
Metro.
Rebel, you.
Well, you know, I was so shocked to see, you know, the Rainbow Pages is in Pearland in this big, like, bank building. You know?
He was really shocked.
I was just like, I thought it'd be like a little tiny hole in the wall. Nobody would ever see it. And, you know, it was impressive. And I think that Rainbow Page is doing a great job for not only our community, but nationwide.
Well, why don't you give us the information one more time to buy tickets and the time and date?
Okay, I would do that.
The play
is Christmas with Grey Aunt. It's at the Ensemble Theater, 3535 Main Street. You can purchase tickets online with us at www.rainbowpagesfoundation.com, or you can go to the theater and purchase tickets.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. If you get a chance, please go out and support the foundation and come to the Ensemble Theater on Sunday.
And thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I wouldn't have missed this for the world.
I'm glad you came.
This is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Next up on this special edition of This Way Out, a review of the latest offering by a popular lesbian author whose magical writing, says our queer lit commentator Janet Mason, examines a reality that is neither pretty nor pink.
When I sat down to read Called Back, My Reply to Cancer, My Return to Life, published in 2009 by Allison Books, by lesbian writer Mary Capello, I came to the realization that I was viewing a life through the portal of cancer, the surprise diagnosis that changes everything. At the same time, Called Back offers an intimate view into the body and culture of breast cancer, which some studies suggest affects lesbians at a slightly higher rate than heterosexual women. It is ironic, perhaps, that breast cancer's public image is pretty and pink, that cosmetic pink gift bags are handed out to some survivors, and that some popular magazines have glamorized women with breast cancer. Capello asked if the same thing would ever have been done to men. Would magazines vaunt their virility, their manly sex appeal as men who are living with cancer? The answer is no, of course, that men are free to face their illness as human beings rather than as gender stereotypes. Capello, the author of two previous books of literary nonfiction, Night Bloom and Awkward, A Detour, redefines the meaning and experience of having breast cancer in her characteristic translucent writing style, and in doing so examines the changes in her mind as well as her body. For starters, she begins to question reality. This is not a dream. Your hand on my thigh, people in rowboats, oboe and tympanum. Your kiss, your hair, this beehive, water lily, sneeze, this braid, this lock, this emerald gnarled day. These peaks of desire are real. My name is Mary, and words, as I have always believed, cast shadows. Shadows being a sign they are real, more real maybe even than this tumor. Mary writes that she begins to feel closer to the women in her treatment group, women who are otherwise strangers to each other, than she does with her closest friends who are not associated with the place she calls Cancerland. The diagnosis even transforms the way she views her longtime partner, Jean. I know this profile. I have loved it for many years. I never thought I would be glimpsing it from inside the force-taught turning of my own body beneath the heavy slab of a gamma ray machine. But I know this profile. I awoke to it in freezing Buffalo mornings decades ago when my eyes would open earlier than Jean's. And instead of getting up or waking her, I would, leaning on my side, study her profile and marvel at the fact that I was in bed with a medieval prince. She finds that in the hospital where she is admitted, that there is no box on the form to reflect her lesbian identity. When filling out the form, she left this section blank. When someone from the hospital calls to ask if she is single, married, divorced, or widowed, Mary replied that she is domestic partnered. The hospital representative on the phone says, "Okay, I'll put you down as married, but I am not married," Mary responds. The woman replies that she would put Mary down as single, and when Mary protests, she says, "Then I'll put you down as married." Even while facing her own struggles, Mary feels compassion for her, quote, classmates in her cancer group and for the other people that she sees when going for treatment, including children. And when her treatment is done, thoughts of the others stay with her. When she receives the results of her first post-treatment mammogram, she is told that all cancer is gone and that she has to monitor herself for signs of a reoccurrence. The surgeon explains that a reoccurrence of an original cancer is worse than a new cancer because it means the disease resisted all that medicine had to offer. On her release, she thinks of cats and how they refuse to come when you call them. Mary poses the question, "Can I refuse to come the next time cancer calls me?" With commentary on queer life and literature, this is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
It's that time of year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives and further reduce your U.S. tax liability. No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
A short that drew raves on the gay festival circuit in 2005 has grown into a new feature-length film in 2009. This Way Out Entertainment reporter Steve Pride goes behind the scenes with its out screenwriter and straight but not narrow director.
I'm Adam Salke, the director of DARE.
David Brin, the writer and co-producer of DARE.
DARE is about two best friends, a guy and a girl, in the last semester of high school who romantically pursue the same guy, Johnny, who's kind of the bad boy in school, in a last-ditch effort to shake things up before they graduate.
Alexa, I had my first kiss tonight.
What? With who?
I also gave my first... Do you think I'm disgusting?
Yes, I think it's absolutely disgusting to... My first date. Oh, you're a total whore, and that's final.
So you don't think...
Do you really think I didn't know? Hey, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it?
Johnny.
What inspired the character of Johnny?
I certainly had a Johnny in my life, which is not to say that I replicated this person, but he certainly was the inspiration for me. It was somebody who, as he moved through high school and just the world in general, he seemed to have an ease and a gracefulness to him that I felt was so foreign that I could never experience what he experienced. And he was beautiful and smart, and there was clearly something below the surface, but I think at first glance you didn't necessarily see it. And I was very interested in portraying Johnny in the film, and Zach Guilford really did an incredible job of this, in showing the vulnerability that is just below the surface, but that comes out for a very specific reason, which is his desire to be wanted and loved and to feel a part of a larger group or a family. You know, I just really wanted to explore that guy that we've all kind of had, or girl, who seems untouchable and unaffectable and so outside of our realm of existence, but you may just be surprised that you are able to connect to that person and relate to them, even if only briefly.
How is being a gay teen different today?
Oh, I think it's very different. I never even dreamed of coming out in high school. It didn't even seem like an option to me. It was like the death knell.
There was no one out in my high school when I was...
We did. We had one girl who was bisexual, I think. Who knows if she was actually bisexual or if that was just another statement in addition to, like, the black nail polish. We had a kid working on the film as his senior project, because we shot actually at my high school for part of it, who came out when he was 14 and had tons of friends, was, like, the vice president of the student council. Again, it's not like that everywhere, but I think we have come a long way in terms of kids being able to express their sexuality much earlier.
Who's the audience for this film?
Young people, for sure. People in college and high school really respond to this film because they feel like it accurately portrays what they are going through. And the thing
across
about...
Across the sexual spectrum.
Right. The thing about sexuality, I think, now with young people is that it's different. People perceive it differently than even when I was in high school. Obviously, this is not true across the country, but in a lot of places in America, high school, the sexuality is considered much less of a hot topic issue. It just is. Kids are coming out at 13, 14. There was that whole article in the New York Times magazine about kids coming out in middle school. So I think that they see sexuality as a little bit more fluid, and they just kind of accept that, oh yeah, so-and-so is gay. Obviously, the gay audience, and I think the art house crowd, older people, have really been responding to this, because not only does it evoke things, you know, watching their kids go through this, but they remember so vividly. I mean, people are coming up to us who are in their 50s and 60s talking about their experience of being in high school and how it really captured something that took them back in a way that they really enjoyed. So I think our audience is a lot broader. You know, certainly one of our characters is gay, and there is certainly gay content in the film, but at least for me, I never intended it to be a quote-unquote gay film. Not that that's a bad word. I think that if that's what you're all you want, that Dare probably isn't going to be just that, a gay film.
One of the things that's exciting about the story for Dare, and was exciting about the script when I first read it, is that we have one straight character, one gay character, and one character whose sexuality is maybe fluid and it's not so clear about where he falls in the spectrum. And each character gets their own piece of the story. So it could appeal to a large audience.
And it also helps that Adam and I are our own mini gay straight alliance, because, you know, you've got a gay writer and a straight director, and we're bringing different points of view that overlap to the table.
What do you want people to take away from Dare?
I think that you have to take risks in order to figure out who you are or who you're not. And all the characters in the film take a risk. They all have what I started to call a moment of daring, where they go after something that they really want. In fact, we've been on Twitter with the film, and we started saying one of our favorite lines of the film that actually became the movie's tagline, "Do something you're afraid of," over Twitter, at Dare the Movie, which is our Twitter handle, and people really started to respond to it, and they started to write in with all these risks that they had taken. And it's actually, I think, something that really resonates with people, because I think in life you have to take chances in order to get the things you want. And in taking those chances, you figure out a piece of who you are or who you're not.
And also, especially for young people, but I think for all of us, to realize that our perceptions of somebody immediately as we see them do not constitute the entire being of that person, and that sometimes it pays to look a little bit deeper and not write people off simply because you assume that they are, using the high school metaphors, like, you know, the bad girl or the good girl or the bad boy and the outsider and the loser, is to take a moment and take a second look, and you may be surprised at what you find, and that you actually may connect to somebody who you never thought you could possibly have any kind of relation to.
The two of you have sort of formed your own gay straight alliance. What have you learned from each other?
What I've taken from it, especially in going to the gay film festivals with this, as well as the mainstream festivals, is that it is really all about the emotions behind things, you know, and that just because somebody's sexuality may not be the same as yours or is even different than the characters, that doesn't mean they can't relate to the emotions behind the driving of it. The gay story will always be unique. We always are going to face unique challenges, especially in developing and adolescence, but that doesn't mean that it's not relatable. And I think that I really loved seeing Adam push himself to relate to the, especially because I think the character, especially in the short, that he related to most was Ben. That was the character he related to. And that was exciting to me, to have him approach that and tackle the story. And also, he directed some really sexy scenes between boys, you know, and that's great. And it was, you know, it's not because he suddenly discovered he was gay or because he's suddenly, you know, going to turn bi on us all, just as I'm certainly not about to start, like, you know, making out with Emmy Rossum. But it was really exciting to me that he just went there. It wasn't even an issue or a question, and he knew that it had to be sexy. And I think he finds it sexy, even though he may not want to have sex with the guys. I think he finds it sexy.
I did.
We can both appreciate, you know, Zach Guilford's body and Emmy Rossum's body together.
Definitely.
This has been a conversation with director Alan Salkey and screenwriter David Brind. Their film, Dare, stars Emmy Rossum, Zach Guilford, Sandra Bernhardt, and Alan Cumming. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, John Frame, Sherry Rund, Janet Mason, Christopher Gall, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Josie Cotton sang Johnny, Are You Queer? And Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible by donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WOMR, Provincetown, Massachusetts, 3OCR, Colac, Victoria, KOPN, Columbia, Missouri, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
delightful little piece of Christmas music was called Merry Christmas, Daddy, and it was by Patrick Arena. And I'd like to thank J.D. for providing the music this evening, especially the gay Christmas music.
We love J.D.
J.D. Doyle.
Yes, J.D.
And for more J.D. kind of stuff, go to queermusicheritage.com.
And what started today, Jennifer?
What started today? Early voting, you guys.
Yes.
For those of you who may have been sleeping somewhere in a cave and did not know, we have a mayoral election.
A mayor's race?
Mayor's race, plus some runoff races for city council, and early voting started today.
So if you
and will continue tomorrow.
It'll go all through the week. And what are the times?
Oh, you are going to ask me.
It's from 8 to 4. Eight to 5. I'm sorry, 8 to 5.
I was going to say.
So if you're working, you have to go during lunch.
You got to go during lunch or, you know, get off 30 minutes early and go by there. So far, there weren't a lot of lines, and this is incredibly important. One thing to remember in a runoff elections like this where there's a possibility of a low turnout, your vote will, like, count for 10 people who didn't show.
So the GOBT vote could be even more important.
Oh, absolutely. It'll be important. It'll be important to everyone. If you're listening to our program, get out and vote. Make the opportunity, make the possibility, get out there and vote. This is your chance to really make a difference. You hear that every election, but this time it's true. You can help make history.
Absolutely. Now, Jennifer, who did we have on the program tonight?
Oh, we had got to get me.
Well, she's getting her glasses out. Tomorrow is World AIDS Day, a very important day in our community, and we spoke with Eddie DeRoulet of the Houston Department of Health and Human Services about World AIDS Day.
And then we had from Thomas Street, Jeff Benavides. HIV health educator. And then we had
Nancy Ford.
Ford from Outsmart Magazine, who was here talking to us about Kindred Spirits production, show, the second annual Judy Garland Christmas special. So and we thank her for coming, and that's on Sunday the 6th.
And on December 10th, which is Thursday, we have Rainbow Pages Foundation's production of Christmas with Great Aunt, and we had Solange Legacy and Lonnie Davis on from that.
And next week, we've got a good show for you. Come join us. You can also get all of this information online at kpft.org. And next week, we'll have David Elliott and GLAAD, Gay Fathers.
We'll have the president of GLAAD. I roped him in.
So. Yes, and we'll also have election updates.
And I believe there is a performance that's coming up, and I thought we were going to have a... information on that, a lesbian performance, but we don't have that information.
We're out of time, sorry.
Just go to our webpage, queervoices.org.
Yes, and this is Queer Voices. Good night.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, and Jack Valensky, with contributing editors Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. The music heard on this program is provided by J.D. Doyle, who also contributes to the audio file segment of This Way Out and who produces Queer Music Heritage, which is an hour-long feature of Queer Voices the fourth Monday of every month. For more information, visit J.D.'s website at queermusicheritage.com. And listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Hall.